mind, of course. The one that is originally in the mind. Honourable members, let's quickly deal with the in-house arrangement. We have received an invitation to this legacy program for the 2010 World Cup. It's going to be at the Letemba Sports Complex in Worcester on the 16th Wednesday, February. And then the Danny Jordan, in collaboration with the Brede Valley Municipality and then and Lottery Distribution, they are launching this 2010 Legacy Project. So those honorable members who are going to be available on Wednesday to go to Worcester for this program, it's a sports program. They must tell us now. The difficulty is that the State of the Nation debate still continues. It's going to end up on Thursday. That is a dilemma in which we find ourselves in. But if we can't go to this one, there will be quite a few of those now that have been launched and then we have never been visible to them. It is wrong because it's you who are insisting that the 2010 must leave a legacy. It must not be the 2010 gone, and there is no remains of the 2010 that remains behind. So I am sure this one will ask for it to apologize to Danny Jordan and his committee that we are busy in Parliament and the State of the Nation address debate is still going on, and that is the President's State of the Nation. So we can assure him that we will come to the other one. The other one, because there will be no State of the Nation, we will request members to ask for a leave and then we attend that program. Wherever it would be, we will attend to it. Yes. Yeah.
For that reason that I believe that they should inform us timely about these things. Very timely. For us to prepare and to plan your week or your month. That gives us, they should inform us timely.
Yeah. Polly will also ask for a program of other possible dates of the launch of these other programs. Polly, don't you have an assistant? Yeah, it's because there are things that you have to know. I'm worried that you skip those things. We are going to apologize to the people that sent us the invite due to the debate of the State of the Nation address of the President. And then we are requesting other possible dates prior to those times so that the committee must ensure that it graces this occasion. But we can assure them that the one of these projects that is going to be launched will be available. So ask for a program for those people. The other invite comes from Office South Africa. Hopefully this one is directed to me, not to Donald, because I know Donald is not a very quiet friend of boxing South Africa. The invitation is a Boxing South African event. Boxing South Africa invites you to join us on the 19th of February 2010 for two special events listed here under. The 35th anniversary of Boxing Awards 2009-2010. This great occasion will be conducted by BSA in partnership with Ekurhuleni Municipality and KwaZulu Natal Department of Sport. It will take place on the aforementioned date at the Durban International Convention Center. Female mass participation program is the second one. As an element of its political mandate to transformation and gender equity, Boxing South Africa will also hold on the same day the female mass participation program, encompassing both amateur professionals and professional female boxers. This noble event will take place at the Durban beachfront in an attempt to create awareness on health, HIV and AIDS, among others. Among those in attendance will be drug-free. So the CEO can see here you'll be doping at the same time. It would give us a great pleasure if you could grace these events with your presence, thanking you in advance. Regards, Acting CEO Louis Sobia. When is the 19th? This Friday. Yes. The 19th is Saturday. Yeah. Honourable members, those members who would wish to go to KwaZulu-Natal, I am going. None. When you stay in KwaZulu-Natal, obviously you're there. JJ also, no, not JJ. The Congress of the People, you are already there. So you and Mem Jog, the three of us are going to be there. Going, God. So Corey, there are three members, two KwaZulu-Natal. One is me, make necessary arrangements today. Corey. Huh? Yes?
Check the diary.
Tentatively, four members make arrangements immediately. Thank you. Consulting service. Okay. Honourable members, I have got a request from the a member of the committee. I hate to say the Democratic Alliance, a member of this committee, is making a proposal that we are going to meet with Lotari, but we must meet Lotari before we meet the department, so that we check what are the resources available for Lotari and what are they going to do for sports in this year. Now, I said the other time to Pori, our problem is not rigid. That problem is dynamic, is a framework, and therefore we are going to request that you inform the prof from Lotari that would like to get a briefing. I think because already we are towards that week of our own workshop, Donald, let's invite him to that workshop where he's going to tell us in a relaxed way and all that. So we want him to be part of our workshop so that at least we hear exactly what he is. He must come with the entire program for the year on the role of Lotari. What are the resources that are there? Where are they directing those resources? So that at least we check the department resources and the resources, whether they speak to each other on a certain vision. Yes, Ms. McKenzie? Okay. So, Honorable Donald, is there anybody who has a problem with that proposal?
No.
The concern. The other thing that has been requested by Comrade Kor is we must have a meeting quickly, and even if it can't be the entire meeting, but the meeting between the president and the CEO of the South African Rugby Union. Because I have received a thesis from a municipality in George around the seventh series. I have spoken to the president of rugby union around the seventh series. In the Northwest, the government of Northwest, in fact, there is a bid for the seventh series. Mpumalanga has made a bid, Northwest has made a bid, and Cape Town has made a bid, Port Elizabeth has made a bid, and also George. But the tradition of the seventh series has been in George for a long time. And I think, again, the other thing we must ask from the municipality of George, why is there possibility of removing a seventh series in George? Because our argument is that when you remove that seventh series from George, what are other development business will take place in George? Oh, because everywhere from Samoa, anywhere, England, United Kingdom, everybody goes to that area for a week, and the economy of that place becomes better for that time. Everybody sleeps for 2 weeks in the hotels there and all that. When you want to take it and take it to Port Elizabeth or take it to a Royal Bafokeng, what are the reasons that makes you to take that? We must just understand what are the rationale, because we are biased to places that are very small that needs to be given a chance to grow. So we have accepted what Comrade Cora, because it is his constituency in that area. Now, Comrade Cora wants us to meet with these two gentlemen, or three, and discuss this matter, because I think we are opposed to an irrational removal of such things because it's driven by money. Cape Town most likely will give them a lot of money. Royal Bafokeng will give them a lot of money. But is it money driven or development driven? Because those are things that we have to check, Dr. Jakut. Fortunately, you also serve there in that area. So it seems we are going to have a little bit of the rouser there. So, but we'll hear what the president say and the CEO around those. But will you invite them as from today and then quickly meet them probably by next week in the morning and deal with them quickly, and then we can release them if they are available. So that matter is taken. The second, it's not for the first time that the second day is. Okay. Apart from the newspaper. Okay. Okay. Honourable members, we are accepting the annual report from drug free. But Dr. Jakut, are you the deputy chair there, or are you a member of the board only?
Honourable Chair, I'm a former chairperson.
Okay.
And I'm a member of the board at the moment. There is no deputy.
The
board of directors.
No, I want to raise something that is not very nice to you and the CEO. You see, Dr. Jakut, by September, we have dealt with annual reports. These annual reports, because these annual reports, in terms of the new legislation on the money bill, we cannot handle this report today and next week Pravin Gordhan puts a budget, then we are likely to give drug-free money. It's not going to happen. And even now, if this committee decides that no, this report came late, in terms of this money bill, the committee can agree and say, no, Minister, we are not going to vote for that budget. Take the element of drug-free out, because drug-free gave us the annual report a week before the budget. Because next week, after the State of the Nation, Pravin Gordhan is going to put the budget. Now, when have we internalized this report? What informs the money that is given to drug-free in the light of the challenges and many of those things that are there? And I am sure, Dr. Jakut, that the CEO knows that there is what you call money bill now in Parliament, and he knows what does that money bill say around issues of giving a report early, so that when a budget is done, one element that is gauging the annual report It's all pronouncement of the Auditor General. How do we interact with the drug-free on quarterly reports around the reports, financial reports, and all those other things? And then at the end of all those interrogations, then we make a report to what we call the BRRR, and then which submitted to Parliament, and the committee makes a recommendation to Parliament around whether this department deserves money or it doesn't deserve money. And then now, when you said, no, the department deserves money, on what basis is the department deserving money when the report is handed the following year in February, when it was supposed to be there? And the annual reports, CEO, you are checked everywhere. Annual reports on the 30th of September, all annual reports are submitted because they are handled in August, September there. And then because those annual reports are taken in the must feed into what you have requested in the financial year for the work of the drug-free. So when it's like this, and the chairman of the board tells us that it's overseas and all that, it's fine. I'm just saying, tell the chair, I am a little bit worried in the manner in which he doesn't care about the responsibility of the drug-free to come to Parliament so that they must be able to give him money. Because in this way, there's a risk of you not getting money. There is a huge risk, not just a small risk, a huge risk, because your report is not submitted on time, and Parliament has not even endorsed this report. It's going to be endorsed almost at the time when the financial, the Gravine has put the financial, the budget. So I don't know what you and Dr. Chakuti have to say. I am pleading with you. I have been attempting to call you, to write you, I think 4 times. And all the 4 times, you were having more business than Parliament. Because of the Act, Mr. Chakut, because of the Act, you are accountable direct to Parliament and the Minister. And therefore, try to understand and say, where is the bigger voice coming? And then you follow the bigger voice. I plead with you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm totally unaware this morning because of the correspondence that you allude to the Chairman of the SAES Board. I'm not aware of that. And in the light thereof, I will ask the CEO of SAES to respond to what you've said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
CEO, I think you know those letters.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and it has been unfortunate that we're only presenting last year's annual report for 2011. Pori and I have communicated since October. We did send, as Treasury regulations, required to send the Portfolio Committee a hard copy by the 31st of August, which we have done. So you should have received it. We sent it directly to the Chairman. Pori and I have corresponded since October, and he invited me then to do the presentation. I accepted it and I informed the department. The correspondence that was sent from the department to Pori and myself is that we cannot present to the Portfolio Committee because the Minister has not tabled the annual report, and that's what pushed the delay. And then obviously in November, when I think the Minister did table it in November, our schedule was very tight with international competitions, and then I was also overseas. But I do appreciate the Minister's flexibility and Pori keeping me updated on available dates, and we eventually did settle on this date. And again, you know, we apologize for, you know, only having to do the annual report now. And I guess for the 2011 year, I take your comments to heart, and we will try to schedule it pretty soon after the 31st of August.
Yeah. No, you see, CEO, the Minister sees the report, and the report is tabled to Cabinet, and the report comes to the Speaker, tabled to the Speaker. And that report of drug-free becomes one report of the department. So the report for the department was long submitted, and then your report that you send with a hard copy was but an element of the entire report of the department. Boxing yourself and the department, you are forming one department, but there are programs, the element. You become program of drug-free within the Department of Sport. So when Makenga Sistofile tabled that, he tabled the entire report, including that preliminary hard copy that you sent to Parliament. So it is not correct. The department was not right to say the minister is not, because they came. Why did the department not coming today? And they've long come. The department long come. And then we dealt with the department. But they are saying to you, no. Come at a certain time, this report has not been tabled. Boxing South Africa, they came. And they spoke to their report. And then why have they not waited? Because the report has not been tabled. So the department was not telling you the truth. But the department must carry this blame. Yes or not?
You know, that now that you're talking, I recall asking where Drug-Free Sport was at the time, because I couldn't understand. There was a report in the composite report. Boxing South Africa was there. Everybody was there except Drug-Free Sport. So I take the point, your point, Chairperson, that really the department then, I won't say misled you, but you should have been informed about the meeting.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Chairperson, before me, I made my comment. I just want to check this institution, the Drug-Free South Africa. Is it a Chapter 9 institution in terms of the Constitution? Chapter 9 or Chapter 10 or part of the departmental arm to regulate?
No, it's not a Chapter 9 institution. It is part of the arm of the department. But it is done in terms of the Act. It's established in terms of the Act to regulate issues of drugs within the sports.
I'm sure the chairperson will need to establish with the institution or the entities that you are dealing with that at least they should support portals so as to avoid this kind of a situation. Get them updated quarterly. Four times per annum, so that we are correct. And such, fortunately, it's the first quarter. So by the third quarter of the year, when we are going towards the annual report, surely we would have got this report. Otherwise, it's unfortunate, just a few hours before the budget will be presented, and we are getting this now. And as such, because I would also like to check on the turnaround strategy. On those issues, but maybe we'll get to that when the AG has picked up in their financial reporting. So I'm saying they put us in a very predicament, because when we interrogate, surely you want us to impress on the treasurer to assist you in finances. Now it's almost soft figures, it's hard figures to be presented to the nation. Where do you place us in terms of our support to you? When the report only comes now, I'm just simplifying what the chairperson is raising in terms of his concerns. Thank you.
Yeah, see, the money bill requires us to interact with you on quarterly report, because we are also checking the financials. Because they are saying the question of a department not being able to use money for the first quarter, for the second quarter, on the third quarter, the department is able to use 75%. When it could hardly use 25% in the first quarter. It's miracle. Where did you get the capacity when it is on the last quarter of the year? Is it fiscal dumping, or you wake up and then you do that? So we're checking those patterns of finance. So even ourselves as a committee, we are directed by law that we must interact with Drug-Free, with Boxing South Africa, with the department on quarterly reports and financial reports, emphasis, so that it is, by the end of the year, we already have an indication what are the issues that are there. So
When the minister presented the annual report here, and the Boxing South Africa was here, and the department was here, drug free, Corey clearly gave us a message and a letter that says the chair of drug free had gone for a conference somewhere outside South Africa. I recall that. Then I said, Patty, he can't do that because he must present the annual report. Then we were a little bit flexible. We didn't want to be hard. Then again another letter was sent. Again, he said that he's not in a position to come because he's going for another meeting. The third time, it's 2 weeks ago, a week ago. 2 weeks ago, a week ago. We sent another letter. And then the chair was unable to come and meet us in Parliament. And then we asked again that he must come today. Fortunately, Dr. Jakut stands for him. It means it was going to be the fifth time that the drug free do not come to the committee just to account for the money that you use so that you must be given the other. But if this is how you're doing, you're running a risk. The little amount of money that you get, you're running a risk of not getting it because you shall have not accounted for the money that you've used. I plead with you. Yes. Yes, you want to say something?
Yeah, I take that, and I also accept the honourable member's suggestion that reporting happens on a quarterly basis. So Pori and I will correspond and get available dates on that. It will make matters easier to keep the committee updated on a more frequent basis.
Dr. Jakut, can there are new members who probably do not know the people that are accompanying you, and then just introduce yourself, and then we're giving over to the CEO to lead us on the presentation, or to yourself.
I'm Ismail Jakut. I'm a member on the board of Drug Free Sport. Khalid Khalant, who is the Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Saban, who is our accountant at the Institute for Drug Free Sport. That's our representation, Honourable Chair. And may I also, Honourable Chair, also apologise for the absence of the chairperson. And I will certainly, as a member of the board, take up this issue at the next board meeting, because as members of the board, we were not aware that we had been requested. In fact, the chairperson had been requested on more than one occasion to present the annual report. And we apologize for his conduct, and we will certainly take it up. I will certainly take it up as a member of the board, because I personally feel that it's unacceptable. We've had always had a good track record with both the Department of Sport and with the Portfolio Committee, and this is absolutely unacceptable to me as a member of the board, and I presume to other directors of the board as well.
Thank you, Dr. Jakut.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also for the opportunity, now that we've cleared delay, the information on the delay in presenting the annual report. Bear in mind, it's 2009-2010. I will address current issues. So as the honourable member suggested, I will touch on historical issues, but also talk about current issues and where we're going with the way forward. The agency background, every year I give some background to the agency for new members to the committee. Just the last couple of points: all major and international sports competitions in South Africa have to comply with the SA anti-doping rules. Last year when I reported, we had two cases pending on arbitration. Those cases were resolved, and there was no adverse findings instituted by the minister. The federation complied, and currently there's no cases pending been reported to the minister for non-compliance of any national federation or sport entity. We have received quite a few applications for recognition from different sport entities, especially in the mixed martial arts. The way the institute works, we will test or work with a federation that is recognized by the Minister of Sport in terms of the Sport and Recreation Act, and also that a national federation that is recognized by SASCOC. Where there's a private entity in sport, we do not test in those entities because there's no mechanism or rules for application of sanction. Corporate governance, the board of directors during this period is listed there, and you have hard copies of this presentation. I think Pori was able to make the hard copies for the year under review. Currently, the Minister of Sport has advertised, I think he will be advertising this week for nominations for two additional members of the board due to resignations. The audit committee for the year under the review is also listed, and we are fortunate to have very senior recognized accountants in their profession on our audit committee. Our internal auditors for the year under review is Mazars Consulting. To go to the annual report, again, just to repeat that Treasury regulations require us to deliver to Parliament hard copies of our annual report by the 31st of August. We did deliver hard copies by the address given, and I know one was personally addressed to the Honourable Chairman. If no hard copies were received, and then Pori can get back to me, and I can rather send it to Pori so that it does get to the correct members at an appropriate time. The audit was performed by the Auditor General. In 2 years ago, when I presented to the committee, you asked me why the Auditor General bill was so high. I explained to the committee that I kept contesting and asking the same question with the Auditor General for such a small agency, why our audit bill is comparative, is more than 1% of our revenue. We questioned inefficiencies of the audit for such a small entity, and we, based on our questioning the inefficiencies and challenging the cost, resulting in the AG waiving 53,000 of the audit charges, acknowledging that they do have quite a few inefficiencies. The report that we received is the unqualified audit opinion expressed by the AG, which means no financial irregularities, fraud, wasteful expenditure, or dereliction of duties by the CEO or the board. There were, however, emphasis of matter. As in any audit, there's always areas of room for improvement. Specific focus in the year under review's audit was the supply chain management, and we have a lot of room for improvement on our supply chain management. Our internal policies need to be better aligned with Treasury regulations. Although we are a small agency and we don't have a full-time supply chain management department, there are some guidelines that we do have to comply with. So we are looking at better compliance and how we comply to these guidelines within the constraints of our budget and our expenditure. Policies and expenditure that were deemed irregular by the Auditor General based on the non-alignment or compliance with the supply chain management policies have been condoned by the board and the audit committee, and I refer you to the audit committee's letter in the annual report explaining this condonement. And then the report on performance. This year, the AG has indicated that they will express an opinion both on finances and on performance. So in the year under review that we're currently talking about, they gave us kind of a taste of how they will be conducting the performance review, though they didn't express an opinion on it. There's a lot of room for improvement, and the AG explained to us how we should structure our performance reporting so that it complies with the new Treasury regulations on performance reporting. remedies following the audit. Again, what an external audit as a message or indicator to an agency, things that you are doing right, if there are any glaring irregularities and where you can improve to achieve better efficiencies and compliance. The remedies that we've already instituted, a staff training on current Treasury guidelines and on the Public Finance Management Act, so that we know what we need to comply with and we know what is current, and that we can do a better job at compliance. Review and amendment of all internal policies as they relate to the Treasury supply chain management. Obviously, after the training, when we have a better understanding of these guidelines, we then have to review and amend our internal policies. The performance management, this has been a huge overhaul in the agency based on the AG's recommendation. And performance management was actually twofold, not only because of the guidelines, but because of the increase of funding. We had to relook at our strategic plan. When we received an increase in funding, the strategic plan, the existing strategic plan, is not more applicable. So we tried to do the two hand in hand in terms of restructuring our performance management and rewriting our strategic plan, again, that it better complies with the Treasury guidelines. And the performance reviews that we've overhauled is reporting on staff performance reviews, strategic objectives that is better outlined, that we can report on it better, and also how we collate the data to report on our strategic objectives. And then below that, the key performance indicators, what indicators talk to these objectives, and that it's clear and succinct, that any reader can understand what we're reporting on. So based on the Honourable Member's recommendation that we do presentations on a quarterly basis, we will use this format so that it's easier to understand, so you can have a good tracking of where we are. So when we come to present our annual report, there's historical information and a line of sight, and you can see the road that we travel. Financial performance. 14% increase in government grant for the 2009 10 year. The current year that we're at is the first year of considerable increase in the government grant to SAID since 1997. There's been a 55% increase. And if you recall, 2 years ago, when we came to the Portfolio Committee and put our case forward with your support, the grant was increased, as Treasury works, they work on a 4-year cycle, so this is the first year that is actually kicking into action. Additional funding, when I came here 2 years ago, it happened to be on the same day that the National Lottery Distribution panel was also presenting, and unfortunately I went after them, and they received a real grilling, so I sat through the grilling that you gave them. And during my presentation to you, you asked me, have you applied to the lottery? And why isn't lottery giving you money? And also that, giving me the challenge that we shouldn't only be dependent on the government grant, that the lottery is a source out there that can assist and supplant and help with increasing the project implementation and not only government grant. I subsequently, after that, submitted an application at the behest of the committee. This was in 2009. I heard nothing from them the subsequent year. Again, I submitted in 2010, well before their deadline. No response. I have been in constant email with the lottery, and all I hear is still processing. Again, I'm bringing this information to the committee's attention, because you encouraged me to do this. I have submitted an application, and I will go through what the implications of our application is. It's a $4 million grant over 3 years, and I'll also explain what we will use that money for. What will the increased funding be used for? This is both. This is primarily, I'm referring to the government grant. The priorities for the increase in funding, as mentioned earlier, is to correct the remedies and recommendations from the AG. So compliance is right up there as a priority. It's better compliance with Treasury and the PFMA. and as I mentioned, performance management, risk management, and staff training on these guidelines and requirements. Anti-doping education, we have increased our footprint in education in the schools. We still, I won't say we have increased our footprint, I'll say we have a toe. We haven't yet put the foot down. We have a lot of work to do still with the schools, and again, there are some funding constraints. The anti-doping education focus will be on schools. This is in order of priority, national federations, coaches, and the topic of sports supplements, and I'll come to that towards the end of my presentation when we go over the press release, the recent press release. Obviously, the increase in testing, which is a part of our core function and core business, increasing the quantity of testing. But this increase is not just throwing numbers at sports, saying, okay, we're going to increase by 10% and just throw it at the dartboard. It's increasing it with smart testing and target testing. And again, I'll show when we do the stats on the number of positive tests and the increase, how the smart testing and intelligence gathering has paid off. Blood testing, athlete biological profile. This is a fairly expensive exercise, but also a very infrastructure intense, and I'm happy to say it's on the go, it's running, and we will be reporting on some findings within this year. And then intelligence gathering. Our intelligence gathering has been at best haphazard in terms of my working with the Medicines Control Council and trying to work with the police. I acknowledge that it's not a high priority with the police, but when one reads in the newspaper about a seize of a methamphetamine lab in Johannesburg worth 25 million, and one knows that amphetamine is a banned substance and can be used in sport, and also the ingredients of if they're producing methamphetamines, you know, and we know that there are huge production of steroids in South Africa that supplies both the Asian and the African market. But again, my progress there has been at a snail's pace, based on the response to working with detectives with the Medicines Control Council, and I'm trying to get contacts within the National Intelligence or prosecutions to beef up this part of our core functions. Results management, we've prosecuted quite a few cases, and I'll come to that. We've had 100% success rate, and as in my communication last week with Corey, or 2 weeks ago when he requested a meeting, is that we were involved in prosecuting 3 cases that week, and this week we're going again into 2 or 3 cases that we have to prosecute, and I will touch on the concern about prosecuting those cases, what athletes we're prosecuting. So that was increased funding will be used for. And to give an example of a one case on average will cost between 15,000 to 20,000 to prosecute if there's no adjournment. That is just collecting of the evidence, paying for the tribunal, paying for the legal support, and the eventual decision. So a simple case like a marijuana, where traditionally on a first offense an athlete will get a warning, it still costs us that money because we have to go through the procedures and respect the right of the athlete to a defense. Job creation. Whenever funding is required, asked for, there's obviously the spin-off of job creation. In the State of the Nation address last week, the President requested us and implored us, every public entity that receives government money, what are you doing to create jobs? And for the year under review, 2009-2010, there were no new jobs created by the agency with as I mentioned, a 10 to 12% increase. We were already cutting on essential services, so there was we were unable to create new jobs. With 2010-2011, with the 5% increase that we received for this year, we've created one full-time position, 2 contract part-time positions in education to beef up our education delivery. We've hired on 15 new trainee doping control officers, which are contracted part-time employees. And if the lottery grant is approved and comes through, the lottery grant will create additional 2 full-time positions within the agency. And again, that gives you an idea of the impact of the lottery grant in our agency. For the 2011-2012 year, assuming that the funding remains constant, and I'm predominantly talking about the government grant, it will create 2 full-time positions, 2 part-time positions, and additional 10 trainee doping control officers, which are part-time workers. Challenges for 2011, looking forward, again, as I mentioned, the school's anti-doping program implementation. This has been a real challenge, especially on the testing part, and at the initiative of various schools and some departments of education, they've come to us and told us, we have a problem at our school. Can you test our athletes? Now, the answer wasn't that simple because we're dealing with minors, and the institute's jurisdiction is for sport, as in entities recognized by SASCOC and the Minister of Sport in the Sport and Recreation Act. So we had to look at the various legal aspects and see where the institute can deliver testing services to address drug use. And we're not talking about drug use generally in school, specifically within the sports context, because that is our mandate at this point. SAGE funding mandate is, as I mentioned, so we don't have and we have never budgeted money for testing in schools. What we have done is reallocate monies that we can provide a minimum of services where there is a huge problem or concern by school governing bodies for testing in schools. Again, the lottery money will be used predominantly in this area. And we have overcome the legal obstacles, but challenges will always remain because we're dealing with minors, with different school governing bodies, with some schools having more resources than others, with some schools having a higher sports tradition than others. We look at how can we support these schools and how can we deliver these services to these schools. Further challenges, as I mentioned, uncertainty over the lottery grant. I can only implement projects if funding is guaranteed. I can't initiate or start projects on the hope that the lottery will guarantee. That would just be financially irresponsible. The grant is $4 million over 3 years. Results management, as I mentioned, the cost of prosecuting cases. We are looking at a sports legal project to develop capacity within our sports law or within our law schools so that we can get up-and-coming lawyers more conversant with sports law and with the anti-doping law, and also with the intelligent information, not only the processing of receiving the information, that we have a better infrastructure to act on it and to prosecute on intelligence that we're receiving. Because it doesn't help us to know, to get information, oh, there's a steroid production lab in Centurion, or there's a steroid trafficking issue in Durban, when we can't act on it or prosecute those perpetrators. The current issues that we're currently experiencing in 2011, increase in athletes testing positive, and hence what I mentioned earlier on, the inordinate amount of time spent prosecuting cases and consuming resources. In 2009 and 10, we prosecuted 18 cases. In 2011 to date, the year is not over yet, we've already prosecuted 26 cases, and these are for steroids, including stimulants and other substances. The primary issue of concern is the age of the athletes. The athletes are younger, they're in school, they're still in high school, testing positive for serious substances, and the ubiquity of sports supplements. We've seen this issue, the media has covered it quite well over the last few weeks. We are addressing it, and we will be hosting an international conference on the role of sports supplements in sport in April, and we will certainly extend an invitation to all the members of the committee to attend the conference and get better acquainted from athletes, from coaches, and from sports medicine perspective of what the role is, why people are using it, if there is a beneficial role for supplements in sport, and also from an anti-doping perspective, what are the risks facing athletes. The media coverage on doping issues, I've included for your distribution two copies of recent press releases on sports supplements. There's been a lot of talk on the Springbok warning for doping offenses, and I think one of the press releases explains the context of what a warning constitutes. Again, the area of concern is that a South African professional boxer gets a 16-year ban for a doping offense. The context of that is it's a second offense. The athlete was tested during the two-year ban, which is a requirement. When you test positive and you ban for any period, we have to test you during that period. He tested positive again during that period for different substances, for even what we call even a harder core steroids. So there obviously are extenuating and aggravating circumstances with that case, and he got slapped with a 16-year ban. And then just as recently as last week, when we issued another press release on a 3-year ban for a cyclist, again, a cyclist testing positive for two substances, showing a method, kind of a methodology of doping and trying to beat the system. On the issue of cyclists, of cycling, we have identified sports like cycling as high priority sport. The Tour of South Africa kicks off on Friday in Pretoria, and we are spending in excess of 60,000 rand on the whole tour on testing those athletes so that we can ensure that one of the premier, or not one, the premier cycling events of South Africa is drug-free and that the winners are true winners. And with that, I conclude my presentation and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. CEO. Honourable members, questions of clarity and all this that noted Mr. Lee, Mackenzie, Matlua, Comrade Suka, the last is Comrade Kor.
Thanks. Thank you, Chairperson. You said two of the board members resigned. Could we know the reasons why they resigned? Was it personal, you know, or was there a tiff perhaps in the board? Secondly, Chairperson, you know, I was asked to respond to the positive kiss done on the two Springboks. Now, you know, if I read between the lines, Dr. Chakut, the whole team could have been positive. And then what would have happened to the name of South African rugby and South African? That's the name of South Africa, really. Because it seems that all the players took that same supplement. Now, how are we going to, as far as I'm concerned, Chairperson, I think that before anything is given to any player, especially by unions, it should really be tested by Draft Reform Sport first. In other words, it should be okayed by you. And if you should be doing such extra things then you need extra money to do extra things, you understand? But I believe, Chairperson, that, and how do they see it, that, you know, if supplements are given to our national sports or any sport teams, really, it should really be sanctioned and be okayed by those gentlemen. Then the next point, Chairperson. You know, I'm glad that you talk about Lotto and the fact that you are struggling to get money from them. Therefore, Chairperson, I want to recommend that we have those documents in hand, so as when we meet the Lotto, I think next week, then we can sort of discuss it, and really want, we would like to understand why they don't really want to assist you, and why is it taking so long to assist you. In other words, if we could have the documentation, I would really appreciate it. Then lastly, a big problem, Chairperson, these drugs at schools. I was approached by a father of a youth next high school, and Dr. Yakut perhaps will know the school, I won't mention names, but it's a school with a rugby, you know, a pedigree. It's known for its rugby. And this father told me, Chairperson, that his son was still sort of forced to use certain things. He didn't know what it already was. And it's because of that that he took his son out of rugby, Chairperson. So, what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, is that we must find a way of getting rid of drugs at schools, because that is really where it starts. And we must really carefully look at ways and means of tackling that scourge at that level, and try and see what we can do and how we can assist from our side for drug-free sports South Africa to really make an impact at school level.
CEO, don't answer, and then I'll give. But on addition to Mr. Lee's question on the two gentlemen who resigned, how much do you pay for members of the board for the sitting allowance? And then the other thing is related to what he raised. I know that there will be some relaxation on certain supplements as from this year or from next year. I think this year, February. And then I want you to indicate to us what are those supplements, because one of those supplements is the one that Habana uses for asthma and for flu and all this. So we want to check, because the two athletes that were tested in rugby, the dilemma was that if it was after this time, now that there will be a relaxation, they could have been free. But unfortunately, you don't do that. You punish a person at a time with what he has done at that time. So I want you to just give us information on those supplements that now are created that people can use, so that if somebody is found with that, and then at least he must not be punished unnecessarily when you have relaxed some regulations around those supplements. It was Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Donald has covered me on quite a lot, but on the supplement issue, Chairperson, I'm aware of someone who was an ex-policeman who now has his own supplement company. And I can tell you he's one of the most wealthy people in this country today. There's a massive demand for some of these supplements. And these supplements are highly, highly dangerous. And in many cases, innocent people like Donald was talking about are getting affected. So that schoolboy in Uitenhage, his father was right. Because you don't know what they're taking. It's a massive problem. Which leads me into the next thing. The presenter mentioned intelligence gathering and the fact that they didn't have the resources financially or physically, as I understand it, to do a better job. There is a gym in Durban, which is upstairs, and below there's a change room, which is used by soccer players and rugby players. You can go there during the week, and you'll find needles scattered all over that change room. That's how blatant it is, Chairperson. This is a massive problem. And of course, the needles are coming from upstairs in the gymnasium. The point I'm making is there's a lot of very dangerous stuff out there, and people are doing things that they should not be doing, both recreationally and in a competitive environment. My last point, because I think we're all talking about the same thing and share the same concerns, the boxer, and as I said in your report, he's still a very young man, but he's got a very promising boxer at that, I believe. He got a 2-year ban, and now it's up to 16 years for a second offence. My question is, was he brought in and explained the dangers not only to his health but to his profession? Was there an educational counselling process that he could understand, or was he just a person who's badly managed and handled by reckless individuals? Thanks, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. It's Mr. McDowell.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to address drug-free sport and the question on emphasis of matter. If one looks to the emphasis of matter regarding the policies, just for noting that I also see that staff training on the current TRASA guidelines and PFMA, and I need to actually red flag this in terms of the PFMA. It's also a very serious offense when it comes to submissions of reports. So the representatives must just take note about that. And regarding the review and amendment of all internal policies, I would like to know, has that been done to the satisfactory of the representative that has been here, seeing also that the supply chain management is also a very strong lack when it comes to the department. And then also I would like to congratulate Drug Free Sport for also having an unqualified positive report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must appreciate this presentation. Chairperson, I've got a few questions. Just want to, you see, the first foremost for me, Chairperson, rather than taking the document from Drafri and present it to Lotto to encourage them to respond, rather we should talk to Lotto to say they must respond promptly on those institutions that are dealing with our people or institutions at a high level. Because if tomorrow, I don't want us to be seen taking a wrong precedent or creating a wrong precedent, tomorrow it will not be possible.
I think that thing is right. Because we are going to say to Lotto, why is it taking 2 years for them to respond on the application? And that application is this one. We are not going to say we force you to take this thing, because there is no way that an application for Lotto takes 2 years just to be processed. And then that application say yes, it's application. Because we don't want to give him stories that we don't know. We must give him that application. Say, here's an application. It has taken 2 years. What is your problem?
Chairperson, maybe you did not understand me quite well. Because I'm talking of a principle. Because if all these institutions might come with a document to say, because you are not responding, I'm saying we must do our oversight to Lotto by not responding promptly or urgently to the applications of the high performance institution. Well, it's the point of reference.
No, we must give them information.
Okay, Chairperson. All right. The other issue, Chairperson, on the condonement of funds that the board and audits, those are huge funds that you have condoned them. I'm having a little bit of a problem. It's more than 600,000 on the condonement. I'm not sure whether what was it that led to that about 685,000 rand in terms of condoning that. Though I understand that the AG has pointed to that on page 27 on your document. And maybe I would want to hear a turnaround on that one, a corrective measure. The second one, Chairperson, is around the amounts to your board members. Can I just get the integrity on page 50 on the document? Yes, page 50. If you look at your executives and the non-executives, especially when it is honoraria payments that are non-executive, the chairperson vis-a-vis and other staff members, you pay the chairperson 33,000 over and above the allowance of 24,000. And yet you do have a CEO that is there driving this institution. Now, coupled with that is the non-payment of other members. Can I get just a little bit of explanation why so much to the chairperson as a non-executive member with those allowances? Vis-a-vis, I understand one member was mentioned here to have resigned. I think it's Dr. Newin. But the other zeros, can I just get an explanation why so much if it's an honorarium? Because it seems to me maybe sitting on a daily basis that leads to a salary. the other one, chaplain, I'm sure you are on page 50. The other issue, chaplain, on the presentation, now the slide, on the penultimate page, on your doping issue. Now I understand, even I just want to get these rights under media coverage on doping issues. You've got a Springbok warning for doping, then the 16-year ban for professional boxer, and the third one is the 3-year ban on the cyclist. Now, on the last two, I think it is for the second time that they've done that, hence the harsh penalty. The 3-year ban on the cyclist, can I just get the story, because I'm looking at the consistency and the level of severity on the punishment, the 16-year vis-a-vis the 3-year ban. Can I just get the integrity of that? Yes, because we condone the severe punishment or the maximum punishment. But can I just get the understanding of yourself, of myself, of this the ban at that 16 years? Surely it's as well as good as to say, I mean, 16 years is well as good to say, go and retire, you know? And the 3 years, you're still having a chance to recover. Yet, they were both on the serving term for the wrongdoing. No, they are not both through Springbok. But they fall under the doggage. Yes. The Springbok. No, the cyclist and the boxer. Yes, on this slide, the penultimate page. No, I don't know, Chair. I don't know. Maybe they will respond.
Because if they want to check whether if they pay to spend that would be the right to then the two or
yeah, that's why I wanted to check the consistency on the ban and the 15 years and so on. Let us stop the chair, but maybe I'll come on the second round, because I do have a couple of issues that I want to raise. Thank you.
You'll get another round. Cora?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to start with the board. These two board members who have resigned, can we get their names? The reason why I'm asking that question, if you look at the composition of the board, there are only two Africans. And to me, it's a concern. That is the first point. Then I want to come to your page 8 on this thing, where you spoke about anti-doping education. Then you go to schools, national federation. You know, last year, at a high school in Dinseldorf, which is part of my constituency, there could be no school because of drugs if they used them. And those drugs had made those students so aggressive that the teachers were afraid of them. Now, as someone I see here, you say that you have not budgeted for school doping. My question is, why don't you budget and let it be rejected? Because it's at school where these drugs are so ready. If you go to up the street, you go to Cape Town High. I know one student there. They found one of these drugs in a second. So these things are there. And to me, to run away from this issue of schools is not going to assist us. So let me come to this, to your report. I pick up here on page 33. Report on predetermined objectives. The Auditor General has highlighted several aspects where the Institute
evidence gathering, record retention, and further reporting on performance against predetermined objectives does not comply sufficiently with national treasury requirements. Can you explain that? It goes further to say, in particular, a close alignment is needed between identified strategic objectives and the measures and indicators that are used to demonstrate actual performance against those objectives. This is consistent with management on risk identification and with the findings of the internal audit. So the internal audit has picked it up, but what has been done? We come to page 32, supply chain management procurement. The Auditor General has highlighted the circumstances that the Institute's procurement policy is not strictly in line with the National Treasury Regulation and SCM, which I know is our practice number 8 of 2007-2008. Further down, disclosure in regional expenditure, number 20, to the financial statement reflects some 710,000 rand of expenditure that is been classified as irregular, requiring disclosure with some 569,000 for the previous year. So it goes higher. Why? I'll figure out some others.
When you're responding to the questions of honorable members, I want you and Dr. Jakut to tell us, is there a legislation problem to give you access to school sporting days for you to be able to test learners? I would say there is a problem when you want to go to school and then you just test them. But when they are in competition, then I do not think that you need a school act or a school governing body for you to go to the athletes to go and test them, because they assume a position of being athletes and not school children when they are there, and therefore gives you as a drug-free an easy entry. I want to check legislation problem there. If there is a legislation problem, present it to us, propose the amendment on the on the Drug Free Act, so that at least it must give you enabling ways to get into the school, coupled with their resources, because your pool is going to be bigger now and your resources are shrinking, and therefore we must be competent to the work that we're going to do around doping and these things of Kreewachen week. And there are schools that are playing there, and you can't say it because they are schools, and then you need to comply to school at Dr. Jakut, and it's a craven week, and kids are playing there, and then you're folding your arms, and then you see that here there's a potential for us to have test those kids. You want to?
Just to add this to the issue which the chairperson is talking about, just like enough. As we talk now, universities are playing it up. You are going to have the Coca-Cola week, that is except the Craven week, which is school children. So this really, when you respond, can you just explain to us what is what around this issue week?
Thank you, honorable members. I'll defer to Mr. Saban or Dr. Jakut on certain questions. To address the first question, and I think it was asked by other members, the question that was most common was the resignation of board members, the names, and the sitting allowance. On page 50 is listed our board members, and I listed it in the presentation for the year under review. The members that resigned was Dr. Gokwana, Bevan Gokwana, and Dr. Jabula. resigned because of Dr. Pukwana became chair of the health committee in parliament, and his commitments were just too heavy, and he resigned. Dr. Jabula resigned because of personal business interests. Her business has expanded, and she also couldn't afford the time. So those were the two resignations, and there was Professor Ojewole. Professor Ojewole retired from the University of KwaZulu-Natal and returned to Nigeria. For the members' information, the Minister of Sport appoints all the board of directors to the institute.
There is a very important factor that you raise there. But as and when you speak, you open up a can of worms. You see, these people that are appointed by the minister sitting in his office, it's a problem. Because let me give you a classical example of the SABC. Can the minister dissolve this board? He can't. And even if there is one person here, this board is dysfunctional. He can't. It's exactly what is going on in boxing South Africa. And therefore, it warrants a change. It warrants a change, CEO, because let me tell you, these people, all of them will have a commitment. Dr. Jakut is getting old, and then in 7 years, he will not be able as energetic as it is, and then everybody is going to go there. But the fact remains, the minister can't dissolve a dysfunctional board. Or let's say all of you do something very seriously wrong. He can't fire you. He can't. This is how these acts that are giving people powers in the office to do things, which are not correct.
Honorable Chair, I'm not familiar with the SABC Act or the Boxing Act, but the Minister of Sport does have the prerogative, and it specifically says in the Drug Free Sport Act that he can appoint and remove any member of the board. So he does, in terms of the Drug Free Sport Act, he does have a prerogative.
He does have a prerogative.
And he is actually currently considering to exercise that prerogative in terms of removal and adding.
You must bring out that other act and check.
I'll email Pori the clause.
Email Pori, want to see that. If that is the first act that I've seen as progressive as that.
To continue then on the remuneration and honoraria of the board members, the schedule and amount and what constitutes a payment to board members is set by Treasury for a what they call a schedule and for a type of public entity that we are in. If I call correctly, I think we are a Class C type of public entity. And there's specific guidelines of when one pays a non-executive board member for activities relating to the institute. So we adhere to that quite strictly. Obviously, the chairman of the institute will have more engagement and more responsibilities to represent the institute and the board, so therefore will be remunerated more often than other board members. Allowances refer to the per diem allowances, which is non-tax, when there is overnight stay both nationally and internationally, and when there are travel around two meetings or two engagements, what we call out-of-pocket expenses. The comparative in the 2010-2009 year, there was a question of why some board members have not received any money, and this is the issue that we've addressed with the minister, and where I mentioned that he's exercising his right to remove and appoint, is that where there is a zero by board members or a low amount, it obviously means that they haven't attended board meetings.
Just help me. I'm happy to hear those. Just help me on one little thing. This board, is it accounting to the minister only, or is it accounting to the minister in parliament? Because if the board accounts in terms of the law that I little know, which are an accounting authority, it makes the board also accountable to parliament. And therefore, any significant approach on dealing with the board cannot be a parameter for the minister only. Because the board doesn't account only to the minister. The board is an accounting authority and therefore is accountable to parliament and the minister. I just want to get those things clear. Honourable members, you see, we have been working things in a wrong way all the time. So I think it is time for us to correct, because the tendency for us to do things in a different way is leading us to a situation where we find ourselves being governed by the board. They are the law unto themselves. They are like suspects. When you touch them, they go to the minister and all those other things. And it must be clear that they are accountable to the minister and parliament. Parliament is us.
Chairman, based on your explanation and analysis on accounting authority, then you are correct. And then that should you should then address it with the minister. Obviously, protocol will dictate that we should not address that issue with the minister. But based on your analysis, then you have a point, and you may be correct. To proceed then with the questions, I touched on the board members. The question from the Honourable Member Lee, what would have happened to the entire Springbok team? So theoretically, based on the assumption that every member of the Springbok team was taking the supplement, and if every member of the team was tested, then theoretically then all members would have tested positive for that. The Honourable Member brings up an interesting issue of, and which we have considered, the supplements being okayed by Drug Free Sport. And for the last 3 years, and I can say on an average of like 3 or 4 times a month, and repeated by the same companies, they will send me an email or beg me to come to my office bearing gifts and ask that we can stamp their supplements, you know, in the same way that the Heart Association or the Diabetes Association will put a stamp on a chocolate bar that say this is good, this is a good chocolate if you're diabetic or if you have heart issues. The difference between the Heart Association, Diabetic Association, and Drug Free Sport is that supplements are not regulated. We do have a list, a handbook, that is about 40 pages long. And I think it's over 3,000 medicines. Medicines are regulated by the Medicine Control Council. So when we say aspirin, Dispirin, when we list it and Dispirin is green, meaning that you can take that if you're a sportsman, we know that that has been regulated and it's on the market, and the Medicine Control Council have approved it, that Dispirin contains the ingredients that says on the packaging. The same doesn't apply with sports supplements, and that's one of the reasons why so many of our sports people are falling afoul of the anti-doping regulations. Some of these supplements, in the case of the Springboks, when the Springboks actually went beyond due diligence, went the extra mile, and they had a certificate from the USN company, from the lab, from a certifying lab in the UK that said this substance is clean, and yet they still tested positive. So the marketing from the supplement companies are very aggressive. They're not regulated. And if I recall, about a year ago, I received an email from Parliament that they was considering legislation on natural products, actually from the Department of Health, and it was supposed to encompass sports supplements. And I gave my comments on the need for sports supplements to be regulated. Subsequently, I don't know. I didn't actually follow up what happened to that legislation, if it has gone as far as a bill or if it's still in draft form. So it's legally, the Institute is placed at high risk if we, at this point, if we do endorse or certain products. However, for us to analyze, we can't set that up. We have the capacity in the country with the universities. But again, it's a considerable resource, and we, based on our resources, we haven't identified it as a priority. It was just not considered because of the expense that it would have incurred.
Honourable Chair, if I may,
may add to what the CEO has said, and I want to emphasize the the whole question of supplements and the risks attached thereto. The CEO has informed us that the whole question of supplements is not regulated. He's absolutely correct. Every medicine that comes into this country, that goes onto the shelves of chemists and doctors, that's regulated by the Medicines Control Council. And it's certificated that this is it, this is what it contains, these are the side effects, etc., etc. Supplements is totally different. Nowhere in the world are supplements regulated. You can set up a little factory in your garage, at home, and manufacture the supplement of your choice and take it to Pick and Pay and sell it there. It is not regulated at all. You are not compelled to state what the supplement does. You're not compelled to state what the supplement contains. You're not compelled to state what the side effects are. And this is the biggest loophole, Honorable Chair, the biggest loophole. The World Anti-Doping Agency has recognized this. We as SAIDS, we've recognized this. International federations have recognized this. And they have warned in every single piece of literature that has gone out against the use of supplementation. But it's like trying to stop a train coming at full speed, because the marketing strategy, and one of the members referred to his very rich friend, who's probably a great marketer, the marketing strategy of the supplement companies are such that we cannot succeed against such strategies. Because everywhere you look, you will find them on the shelves. You go to Dis-Chem, you go to Pick and Pay, there's a huge section merely for supplements. It appeals to the man out there and to the woman out there. Hence, we find that it is extensively marketed at gyms, other than, of course, not just the supplements, the other medication, which we will talk about at a later stage this morning, the steroids and so forth, which you will find at gyms. But I want to confine ourselves to the use of supplements. Some years ago, and if I may refer to Huntley in conjunction with SAIDS, we brought out a document, and we included that as part of our education campaign, in which we warned all our athletes against the use of supplements. We indicated to them which supplements are of any use to you and which are useless to you, which are classified as banned, which are not classified as banned. We have now realized that despite that, athletes will still consider or still dance to the tune of their coaches, the fitness advisors, and not listen to those people who matter, which is the medical profession. Internationally, many international federations have also seen the problem, and their approach has been, if we can't stop this, the scourge of supplements, let's see to what extent we can minimize the risk of our athletes testing positive. That has been our approach in this country. We have then said, how do we minimize the risk, knowing we can't stop the process of supplements? It's every person's right to be able to go to a shop and buy any supplement of his choice. But how do we minimize the risk of our athletes, whether they're rugby players or whether they're soccer players or whoever, how do we minimize that risk of them running foul of anti-doping laws? How do we minimize that risk? And we have come up with what we thought to be the answer, where we are saying to them, okay, you use only supplements of belonging to companies that have a good track record. You get your companies that you buy them from to put their money where their mouth is and certify their products that they are free. And you, and we constantly warn them, you are taking these products at your own risk. Some federations took a step further, and Drug Free Sport did that as well, by testing some of the products at the request of international or national federations. Now, coming back to answering the question of Mr. Lee, yes, the rugby did all that. All the supplements that were taken by the national team in this country were certified to be drug-free. There was nothing in it that contained any banned substances. This is confirmed by the laboratory in Bloemfontein. However, the same product in the UK that they used here was supplied to them by the same company that supplied them in South Africa. And that product contained the banned substance. It was the UK batch that was contaminated by that particular substance, and not that which had been used with impunity here in South Africa. So yes, Mr. Lee is right. If at the time the whole team was tested in the UK, which was very unlikely because in competition they only test two from each team. If they had tested the whole team, all of them could have been tested. If they had tested any two other players, there's a chance that if they had taken that supplement, they would have tested. It would have been a disaster. It would have been a disaster for South African rugby. Would have been a disaster for this country. So, yes, rugby did take the necessary precautions to try and minimize that risk. It has now gone one step further, and this has been in the press, has been recognized by SAGE, that rugby has gone this one step further and said, from this day onwards, that was November last year, no supplements will be supplied to any national team. We no longer recognize that, let's see how we can minimize that risk. We are saying, let's see how we can eliminate that risk.
Dr. Jagut, you're communicating a very important message to the nation. Very, very, very important message. But you know, this nation sees a team that is using supplements that are not right. Nobody from a drug-free who had said, no, the supplement comes from the UK, which is a similar supplement that we're using in South Africa, but there was contaminated. Nobody has communicated that. Because you must not handle these other countries holier than South Africa. Because when this matter goes to the air as these irresponsible managers of the rugby team, and then who can cause a disaster that Mr. Lee is referring to. Yet it is not you. It was not you. It was a prescribed supplement by the company that is supplying South Africa, but in the United Kingdom, but there was contaminated. That kind of a message was supposed to be communicated so that everybody must know that, no, it was not the fault of those boys. They never do mischief. But now everybody who don't have this information that you give, it is still in their mind that those boys in rugby are mischievous. You see?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Now, as I said, we have gone one step further and said, right, it's not a question of minimizing the risks. It's a question of eliminating the risks. Rugby since November has not supplied and will not supply any member of any of its national teams with supplements. They beat England without supplements. They just won the tournament in Las Vegas, the seventh, without supplements. And any player who takes supplements, it is his personal responsibility and he is strictly liable for it. But the South African Rugby Union has now shied away, and that's a step that they have taken in terms of the supplements. And if I may just think, I'm talking about supplements and this particular matter of those teams, may I just allude to one of the questions that was asked in terms of substances that used to be in a certain category in a particular year, why it's now in another category the next year. This happens, Honorable Chair, particularly in a group of substances called stimulants. Now, stimulants are substances that have had a very short life. It's often found in common medications. It's often found in cold medications. It's almost often found in nasal sprays. And if abused, yes, it has an effect on you. It has an effect that will last for a few hours and if used during any competition, yes, can enhance your performance. But at the same time, it's also used in treating illness. Somebody has a blocked nose, he uses that nasal spray the night before, he will feel perfectly fine. But if it contains that banned substance, he will test positive the next day if he's tested at the game. So they've recognized that there are substances like that which that player or athlete has not used for the benefit of improving his performance the next day. He's used it to help him with his cold. So they have recognized that substances, and they've called that specified substances. Okay? That's a totally different category to stimulants. Stimulants can be straight stimulants like your cocaine. That's a straight stimulant. Methamphetamines, that's a straight stimulant. But there are certain medications that are used to treat illnesses which can be found in those medicines. Those are all specified substances. Yes. Now,
I want to ask you a question,
Chairperson. Yeah, I just want to think, ma'am, Mr. Chairman, I just finish that one question, why it's now been reclassified. Now, during last year, they discovered this particular substance to be common in medications. And they said, well, it doesn't belong in the stimulant range. You don't have to give people 2 years sanction if they found to be positive for the substance, because it is so common. They may not have used the substance to enhance the performance. They may have used it just for the cold. And this one of those, and that substance was the substance that we're talking about in the Springbok team. So from 1st of January, they took that substance out of the stimulant range and said, let's put it in another category, the specified range, the specified group. Now, specified group is a different group. There's no 2 year ban for a specified group. It ranges, if you are satisfied as the tribunal, that this person did not take that substance to enhance the performance. You're very satisfied. They produced the evidence, how they got it into their system. They've given you proof, full proof, that this is how I got it into my system. And you're satisfied, no man, this guy didn't really commit an offense. You're entitled to give them a warning. You're entitled to give them much less than what would have been a 2 year sentence. So that is where that comes. It's called the Lex Meteor principle. If it happened in November and your hearing is held in January, you can say, no, man, it's not fair. It's not fair. Happened in November, and now in December, it's like when we changed over from hanging to not hanging. You didn't hang people that received the sentence 2 years. You said, no, it's not fair. The hanging is out. Now, that is called the next meteor principle. And that's what happened to those two Springbok rugby players. And coming back to the third one, another question that was posed. Why 16 years? Why 3 years? Why a slap on the wrist? Why a reprimand? Sanctions are not dependent on the sport code. I want to make that clear from the beginning. It doesn't depend where you come from. The sanctions are determined by WADA. And every international federation that is a signatory to the code will apply the same sanctions. Sanctions are determined by A, the substance, which category it falls. Steroids, 2 years. In fact, all of them are 2 years, with the exception of your specified substances. That's the next category. So the substance and which category it falls. Specified substance, you can reduce the sanction. And exceptional circumstances. Is there a fault on your part? Is it absolutely your fault? Or actually not your fault, or somebody else's fault, then you also made it, but you must prove that. Then you can reduce the sanction. And the third category where you can reduce the sanction, have you been of assistance, and this is called the whistleblower clause, have you been of assistance to this hearing to identify a few other athletes in the process that you can now nail, also for having done, the Zaman in the United States.
You have your own pre-bugging
Zaman. That's it. It's called the whistleblower clause. This is what happened to Marion Jones, Ronaldo, and U.S. athletes. That was the whistleblower clause that was implemented. So when an athlete gets a reprimand, yes, it can happen. Depends on the circumstances. It has nothing to do with the sports code. The guy was 3 years, two substances at the same time. And they thought it was bad enough. 2 years for both would have been 4 years, but it's giving you 3 years. The guy 16 years, the first offense has 2 years. Subsequent offense can be a life ban, so 16 years is probably a life ban. If you commit the same offense, but this is even worse, he committed that offense in the 2 year period where he was banned. He committed in that period, so that is a life ban. So I think I've answered some of the questions. I'm sorry I've taken up your time, but I thought I can, because some of these questions overlap.
Yes. Dr. Yakutman, you said that rugby stopped the use of supplements. Rugby, you mentioned rugby. Now, we are, I suppose you're aware that it's also happening in the other codes. Have you perhaps instructed or just have you spoken to the other codes of stopping these things? That's really the question.
With the issue of supplements, we haven't thrown up our hands in the answers and said we can't do anything about it. As I mentioned, we are planning an international conference in April. For that conference, I've put together a task team of about 8 professionals from representing different aspects of sport, including coaches, including athletes, so that when we advise federations of how to amend their policies, they are doing it from a position of knowledge, from a position of information, bearing in mind that, as Honorable McKenzie said, the sports supplement industry in sport is just like SAV. They are big. If we look at our top performers in terms of cycling, triathlon, mountain biking, canoeing, look at what emblem they have on their kids. Look at who's sponsoring our top event. It's a supplement company. So for us just to tell a sports federation to kick sports supplement companies to the side is slightly irresponsible from a financial perspective, because they're going to laugh at us. So we have to give them the information to make good decisions. So we are planning of that conference. It will be held in towards the end of April, and I will extend an invitation to all members of the committee, and we hope that you can attend and perhaps give the perspective as you just did this morning. When the warning comes from us, some take it very seriously and some laugh it off. When the warning comes from the portfolio committee, they know the consequences of being hauled here and information being made available in the public domain. They also know the consequence, like with everything, money talks. When you tell them this, if you have too many positives in your sport, your funding may be revoked. These guys' ears will perk up rather than when they hear it from me or they're considered to be the policeman.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes.
Just to answer Donald's question, SA Rugby Union, the national team, we have withdrawn supplements. There may be one or two unions in SARU that are sponsored. I know Western Province sponsored by a particular company. You'll see it coming up when you watch the game, Ewox. I know the Sharks are sponsored, and there's one or other.
Think about the Sharks. Think about the Sharks.
They are sponsored by whoever company it is, but that is a risk that they run. They need to have a look at minimizing their risks and take the lead that we have taken. Not minimize, eliminate those risks. But we can't subscribe to them. They are there. They contracts with those companies.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Jakuti, the deputy president of Sharks. Yeah. when the national federation sets the pace, all of us follow. So the deputy president is here. He must go and sell this thing, and the Sharks must stop that thing of that drug that they're doing up there. Yes. Yes, Cora.
The issue of the constitution of SARU comes in here again.
we've been hammering that this independence of unions, that the mother body can't subscribe to its kids, comes in now. You say that no substance, but they have been landed by the way, and there's nothing which you can do. That is the first issue. The second issue, you know, when you were explaining the issue of the substance that it comes from abroad, if you can remember, Basson said that they are on their own. Nobody is supporting them. There was even a talk show on radio over this issue of this license to be left out to hang there on their own with no support from neither. And today you say that if you people have said that this then, that you would say that at least you've got the support. But for us to leave those lights, and now I don't want to lie, I was taking that thing on racial lines. Because why is it so quiet? The one person even went to so far as asking, what is Peter de Villiers saying? That's the Villiers first of saying that we support this license, we understand the government, we defend themselves in. But to be quiet, and Basson had to withdraw, because I know what has happened, that you must not speak out, but when you are in such a way, there is no way that you can't translate it, because you went there to represent this country. Thank you. Now that you say that this drug comes from there, it was if that was said then, would have understood their support. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a drug that usually they take in South Africa, which is supplied by a country in United Kingdom. But when they were there, they used the very same drug, but that one was contaminated. You see, it could have given, honestly, could have given credibility and support to our boys if that message could have come up in the manner in which you have put Dr. Jacoot. But God is right. They were hanging along there, and then, the matter is over. But I think in it's a lesson. Next time when they say, no, let them be slaughtered, say, wait. Let us find out, establish facts first. And then from there, Dr. Jacoot, as a doctor, will go and talk to us and explain what is going on there. Then the nation will stop guillotining those boys. Because the nation was just putting them on the altar. Passing that disc.
Mr. Simmons, on a lighter note, I know that my name is often associated with rugby because I've been around for forever. And this is a strange hearing.
Yeah.
If we could leave the rugby issues of the Constitution to when the rugby sits here, it would be, better.
Thank you, Chairperson. Not on the matter, but I just want to check on page 37. On your.
There are a few more questions to be answered. About the lotto and all those things.
Okay. Okay, no.
Thank you, Chair. I've just ticked off some of the questions that were asked by Mr. Lien. The last question that he commented was, which was similar to the question from Honorable McKenzie, was the issue of drugs at schools and kids being forced to take certain drugs. And then Honorable McKenzie gave an example of the gym in Durban. We do have that information. As I mentioned, the challenge of intelligence gathering, but also prosecution. When we get information like a gym in Durban, and when I assure the person giving the information that their identity will be protected in terms of South Africa's whistleblower legislation, to get information like a gym in Durban is very vague, or a gym in Johannesburg is very vague. So if I pass on that information to the police or to the detectives with the Medicines Control Council, they ask me, are you kidding me to give me such vague information? So until we have a better relationship or our own resources, it's very difficult to follow up when the public gives us vague information. That being said, we have received also very credible and specific information which we have acted upon, and some people have been caught in that sense. I think the the explanation from the boxer, the question on the boxer receiving 16 years. The boxer attended his first hearing when he received the two-year ban. He's a very intelligent, articulate professional and boxer. And even during his high school and college that he attended, he actually said that he did attend and took a sports administration and management course, and one of the modules wasn't doping in sport, so, and drugs in sport. So he was very familiar with what is banned and what is permitted. The boxer did not attend his second hearing, and again, it was, though it's not held in prejudice when he doesn't attend, he didn't submit any evidence in mitigation. And as we mentioned, the substance was an even stronger steroid. It was actually a veterinary, an animal steroid that the boxer took. The questions from the Honorable Madlowa, the emphasis on matter, review of policies, and whether it has met our satisfaction. Yes, it has, but not completely. We are currently having our internal audit reviewing it. We're reviewing it with the eye through the lens that, can you review these policies? We are happy with it, but does it still satisfy the Treasury regulation and PFMA? So when the external or the AG's audit starts, before they start, we can make corrective actions. That by the time they start, that we have corrected or made a better compliance on that. With the Honourable Member Suga, I will ask Mr. Saban to address the question of condonement of funds. We've dealt with the we've answered the question of honorary and non-payment. You also asked under the presentation where I spoke on media issues, the cyclist ban of 16 years versus 3 years. I think we did touch on that in terms of different substances. You get banned and each case is treated independently and different, and in some cases leniency can apply, and in some cases they are aggravating conditions to consider. So I'll ask Mrs. Aban to address the question of condonement of funds.
The Honourable Mr. Chair, on the issue of the condonement of funds and irregular expenditure, this was an issue that as management of Drug Free Sport, we had actually disagreed with the external audit finding. And bearing in mind that Drug Free Sport has a full-time staff complement of 5, including the CEO, we do not have a supply chain management or a procurement team. And because we had disagreed with the finding, we had actually requested the audit committee to do a review of all expenditure and express their opinion. I refer you to page 32 of the very same report of the audit committee. The very last paragraph, the audit committee in the annual report had actually commented on. The audit committee had conducted its own review to confirm the necessity and appropriateness of this expenditure, and has satisfied itself as to the manner and circumstances in which these items were incurred. All expenditure were incurred strictly in accordance with the board's approved procurement policy. And it goes further and it states that it also noted that this aspect was not identified as a compliance issue in the prior year. Just to give an example of some of the costs or some of the expenditure classified as irregular. So although the amounts of 710,000 Rand and 569,000 appear extraordinary, it was not incurred on one vendor. Some of the examples were on our internal audit service provider. The Institute had gone and had requested from reputable auditing companies proposals for the internal audit service. We had not received from the third vendor the formal proposal, hence we only had two quotes. And because of the fact that we did not get our third proposal in, the Auditor General considered that that is irregular. further examples are on our lease routing costs, where our only technical provider is Nashua, that supports the service in Cape Town. They've also considered this to be irregular. And it goes further on where Treasury regulations stipulate that some of the quotes can be written or verbal, where the Auditor General had not satisfied themselves that we couldn't provide audit evidence of verbal confirmation, which is not practical for the Institute of Drug Transport. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You see, you are giving us clear, elaborative questions on this, but the Auditor General did not start with a drug investigation. The Auditor General started what you call an internal memo to the drug free, communicating clarity on this matter. And then why that time have you not provided this clarity? Because I can tell you, he could have not been here. By he being here, it means there's been a break of communication on the internal memo between your department and the Auditor General's office. So we don't dispute that. You're saying, but you're saying you are at fault, the way we understand these things, because if you have communicated, firstly, as soon as the Auditor General busy interacting with the CEO, picking up these things, he sent an internal memo to him and said, can you explain this? Say, no, the board has condoned this, these are the politics behind that. Then he says, okay, fine, then the Auditor General will not teach you. Yes, sir. Am I right or am I wrong? I just want to hear. Maybe there's something that has happened. Maybe there's something there. I just want to check whether are we right, because in our little knowledge, that is how we understand things going on. Yes.
Honourable Chair, you are right about the procedure, and obviously we do have to acknowledge some of the errors on our part in terms of the compliance, which we have corrected. However, with the context of whether the Auditor General also has a prerogative whether to accept our explanation, and as I mentioned earlier in our presentation, we question the Auditor General's methodology and inefficiency of doing an audit for a small agency and spending 4 months just like they do an audit for a provincial department or a national department. So to start off, I would say they have the prerogative to whether accept or not accept our explanation, but also the context of that we may not have had the optimal relationship in terms of a auditor-auditee relationship.
Chairperson, I think it was when you explained the process and the procedure and the communication, well, surely also the auditor is governed by the rules of parliament or the rules of state as how to interact with its entity. So it's not about the gentleman's agreement. It should be by law. So I'm saying, for instance, if they picked up that you did not have three codes, one also immediately questioned himself, how do you award those projects to a particular company or service provider that benefits over and over again, because we are avoiding that. So I'm saying the issue of the rules of the game should be observed. There's no feelings about that. Thank you.
No, sir, we're not going to contest that. We're just saying, in the very same manner of unevenness and lack of sensitivity of the Auditor General to a small entity like yourself, you could have raised that just like you raised to us and the plight of the money which we requested that was given to you. You could have said, Chair, this matter, in our communication letter to the Auditor General, we have raised this, but unfortunately, he subjected himself to the regulations that are existing. We could understand that was what we're saying, but we're just putting a simple principle that If he do understand, he would have not put it here if there was a proper communication. But if there was a proper communication and then he went further and do this, you'd say, no. In our internal memo, we have written to him this and this and this and this. But unfortunately, he has a prerogative and then he has written override that and put this in this. We're just saying those things because those are some of the things that would come, and then where we're likely to have a tussle about what are the things that we and how do we understand them too. Yes, you can go with other answers.
Thank you, Chair. I think there were quite a few of the other questions that overlap, but there are two comments or questions from the one by Honorable Cora. Why not budget the schools? And when he spoke about anti-doping education, you also mentioned the Craven Week and Coca-Cola Rugby Week. We do test at Craven Week, and last year there was one positive test from one of those weeks. Craven Week is very different from when Bishops runs onto the field against Weinberg Boys. Craven Week happens under the auspices and sanctions of SARU. SARU is a national federation, and we have jurisdiction. When two schools play on a field, whether it's a big tournament that's televised, it's not under, because these are independent school, what they call the Independent Association of Schools. So they're not governed by a national federation, though they're playing that sport. So that makes the issue of jurisdiction a bit trickier, especially when we do find a positive and how they're going to handle it and how they're going to prosecute it. As I mentioned earlier, we have overcome a bit of that obstacle with the agreement of the schools, and they, at their initiative, they are coming into our system. The Honourable Chairman asked me the question, is there a legislation problem in terms of the schools and with implementing our mandate, as our mandate changes, as it pertains to the prosecution, investigation, intelligence gathering, and as the World Anti-Doping Code becomes even more cumbersome and advanced? Yes, there is a problem with legislation. I mentioned in our presentation that we do have a sports law project that we are starting this year. We will be looking at that and coming with concrete proposals. And at this point in our thinking, we're not looking at amendments. We're looking at proposing to the committee a redrafting, a complete overhaul of the Drug-Free Sports Act that we can address the issue of schools, we can address the issue of intelligence gathering, a more and more common issue that is coming up that we've been at in international forums. As anti-doping agency, you're the custodians of ethics and fair play. What are you doing to tackle gambling? Though you haven't looked at this, you've always looked at drugs. What are you doing to tackle corruption and gambling in sport? The board, in our strategic planning in October, November last year, asked me the question of, in terms of the results management, should you be looking at establishing a court of arbitration in South Africa, a court of arbitration in sport, where we not only deal with anti-doping issues, but federations who have arbitration issues can seek relief rather in the infrastructure of sport rather than in civil court, where it's very expensive. The agency is positioned as an independent agency by Parliament. We treat every federation fairly and equally, irrespective of size. So according to the board, we are best positioned to drive and establish a concept like a court of arbitration in sport, and we will be coming to the committee with proposals for enacting or considering for legislation, and these will be some of the, and we're hoping to do it within this year.
I'm a bit covered because I had a concern on the job creation on the airline, where they were having one full-time position and two contract part-time positions in education, with 15 trainee DCOs contracted on part-time positions to give them 1,000 rand each person on the suit. Because I was trying to match that with your page 37 on the payroll cost at 1.5 million, not unless there is a disjunction. I just wanted to have that clarity on page 37 around the payroll and the net salary vis-a-vis your job creation in terms of your slides, because your turnaround on 2011-2012 is a thing of two full-time now, and of which I would assume that surely your what do you call this bill, your money bill, will also change. Because I was a bit concerned the 2010 salary vis-à-vis on the slide. Can I get that explanation on page 37?
Thank you, Honourable Member, for picking up that and also for noting that there is a not a disjunction, but there's a different classification.
Mm.
Our part-time contract workers is at the open control offices. We don't categorize them in terms of page 37 and 38, their remuneration under payroll. Their remuneration is on page 38, and you will see traveling and accommodation and DCL reimbursement. So that's where the two where the part-time contract workers, where their remuneration fits in. In terms of the job creation, those that we are looking at, again, as I mentioned, I put a plus there, is contingent on obviously, or the assumption that the money bill that they've allocated for us in the projection for the four-year period is not only constant, but also with the speculation or assumption that we will receive the lottery grant.
I just want to check something here. On the chairperson's report on page 5, we have a huge in paragraph 1, 2, 3. Paragraph 3, we have a huge success in partnering with a number of National Federation as well as with SASCOG in our education program. What education program is SASCOG providing? And to who is it providing?
I think the key word is partnering. SASCOG doesn't deliver the anti-doping education programs. We partner with them or they partner with us. And what we've, the successes that we've had with them is when SASCOG has either the national AGMs or national meetings with federations, they inform us when those occur, so we can either piggyback on those dates when officials are in Johannesburg at Olympic House. We will have a meeting before or after, or we will be on the agenda. Also, SASCOG has regular regional camps with the top athletes, with the provincial academies, and we piggyback on that. They share that calendar with us. So that we can also provide education sessions to our top athletes.
So they just inform you, then you go and do the work there.
Yeah, and they will cover some of the costs in terms of traveling and getting access to the athletes.
Okay. When you go down to the very same page, down there, the last paragraph, despite the success, huge challenges remain. The first is to extend and enhance our athlete biological passport program. I want to check that biological passport program. Is it ready now? Because at the time when you presented to us, you're busy working on it, and then it was one also that was putting a little bit of a hole in your finances. I want to check that. And how effective is that biological passport program? Then immediately thereafter, then the statement says, the second challenge is to force mandated authorities to exert greater control over the supplement industry. Then you say something now. This is an expanding industry, and I have no doubt that unwittingly athletes are falling victim to contaminated supplements. This effort requires coordination of a number of role players, including state. Most importantly, however, political will is required to give, what is it? Yeah, attraction on this process, which has thus far been lacking. Just want to understand this. Whether you never got a political support on this matter, or what is it? And then I must understand the statement that you're saying. So that if there's no political support, then we must check what is the problem around that. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. On the athlete biological passport, there were a lot of infrastructure challenges last year. I can say that the program is up and running. and I will also send correspondence to the committee to Pori, probably within the next 2 months, because we are investigating a case, and the ABP program in all likelihood will have a report or recommend its first positive based on a profiling case and on a blood collection case within the next 2 months. We currently just have to do further investigations and confirmations and wrap that up, but we will be in all likelihood prosecuting a case. So the acid biological program is up and running. It will be we target specifically cyclists, triathlon, canoeing, swimming, and though there are challenges still remain, it is jogging along. Your second question on the political will.
If it's written by the chair, you don't respond. Don't respond.
No, no, I can really respond, because we did discuss this. We had some challenges last year with the political will, with the executive authority on acting and on opening doors to law enforcement, to the regulatory agency. And I think we're more optimistic this year with the current minister. He has expressed not only an interest but an in-depth understanding, so we are a bit more confident in seeking the guidance from the executive authority.
On page 9, the board of directors, everywhere, this Dr. Adams is everywhere. And where this Dr. Adams is, it is not left with controversy that he caused. This Dr. Adams was the man who carried the Castor Semenya saga between the doctors of the IWF and South Africa. When everything falls apart, he was a survivor. To what extent are you definitely sure that you are dealing with a reliable man? It's not reliable in my view. To what extent are you sure that you are dealing with a reliable person?
Chairman,
hello.
Because
I'm giving an empirical evidence that when things fall apart, he was a survivor in that flight that is take the dive into the sea. When things do not come right here, do you think that is going to die with this director, or is going to be a survivor too?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Earlier on, the CEO alluded to the fact that we have submitted to the minister a report on the activities, and we have our activities of a board of directors. And in that, we have identified areas or persons that have not been forthcoming in adding value to the functioning of the board. And Dr. Adams is one of those names that has been submitted to the minister, and we've asked for the removal of some of those individuals from the board in terms of the powers given to the minister in terms of the act.
Thank you, Dr. Thank you very much. Let's go quickly. I'm going to finish in about 3 minutes. Let's go quickly to page 27. The matter of emphasis, as it was discussed recently or by minister, as disclosed in note 20 to the financial statement, irregular expenditures amounting to this was incurred as a result of non-compliance with some of this. What did the auditor, because if the auditor general, we met with the auditor general and asked him around sports and recreation matters, because he said they have not written to me and say to me what is the next issue so that we must override this. If you don't do that, in the next report, of the Auditor General. This is going to follow you. I think you know, CEO, that he does it. So it is best that you communicate with the Auditor General and explain exactly the policies that you have given to us, so that in the coming report, this must not come there. We were having a car that was sitting in the Deputy Minister's office, and the car that was used by the Minister, which has caused a big problem. And the politics behind that were explained to us. But it was carrying on and on and on and on up until we had a bilateral with the Auditor General to discuss this matter. Because the committee could not just pretend that this matter is not here and we can't talk about it. So I would really urge you that you look into that matter so that it is. But here, Dr. Jacob, I am subject to be corrected. I don't know how the report is written. It is said here, on the very same page 27, down on 10, the accounting authority did not ensure that the entity has and maintains an effective, efficient, transparent system and all that. I do not think this matter belongs to an accounting authority. And then when you check quickly on, I'll show you, because it's exactly what I raised, CEO, of the accounting authority and the accounting office. In another part here, it speaks of the accounting authority didn't submit the financial statement. The accounting authority, it can't be an accounting authority that submits financial statement. It is an accounting officer that submits financial, because the accounting authority deals with the overall exercise of the management of this entity. And when you do this, it means if there is any other thing wrong, this puts the accounting authority into a responsibility that doesn't belong to them, because it is them that have to ask you that you didn't maintain effective and transparent system. As an authority, they will say to you, you must set up those systems, and then as an officer. But them as an authority will give you that kind of instruction. There's something not right about how this whole thing is designed, because it takes your responsibility and shifts it to your bosses. And when are your bosses around the policy and other things that you have to report to them, and then they give you a direction on those? So it is something that I have picked up, because in another one, I even second, where they're talking about financial reports that has to be handled by the authorities. The financial reports are handled by the accounting officer, which is the CEO. The 53 million wave that you're talking about.
52,000.
Abiga?
53,000.
53,000 wave is the one that you got from the tax, or where did you get it?
No. That was from the Auditor General. That was their fees.
Yeah, after we asked the Auditor General the rationale of charging the small entity as the same as the big Department of Public Enterprise.
That's correct.
So at least we gave you a bonus there. But on this slide, to me it's page 4 on the small one. There's something that I don't understand there. You're saying the policies and expenditure that were deemed irregular have been condoned by the board and the auditor. It's the very same thing that we picked up there. Because here my question is, what is the Auditor General's view on this?
what are the communications with the Auditor General to write this matter? Because if you don't communicate with him, and then the Auditor General will still have to put this thing back here. But one important thing that Suka raised, that you have raised here, I don't know why you're shying away from it, is on page 8, your government, where you said the state of the nation, about job creation. Sir, when we come back for another report, we want you to give us a plan of how are you going to improve on the job creation. A very arrogant plan. And say, this is what we would intend to put as a plan for us to impact, to do an impact on the job creation of the president. You must not play small when the challenges of the drugs are this huge, and then on the basis of resources. Say, this is what we want to do, and then these are the resources that we need to meet these challenges. And our input to the present state of the nation address on job creation will be this minimal, and then that is what we want. And right through to all the programs of the department, and the minister, when he comes here, he's going to show us and say, Minister, what is your input to the job creation of the president? Or what are every conditions that the sports put in place for people to be able to do business and then create jobs for people there? And that is something that we will not just leave it to chance. We are going to definitely take it, and then there should be clear, concrete plan. And then if you have to go and ask money elsewhere, we will help you just like we help you on this one. But definitely, you have to talk about jobs for our people. No, in the department, in your department, as I see, there is no open vacancy there. The vacancies that are open with the Department of Sports and Recreation, they are going to be open only for 90 days. We are going to check with the Auditor General, the entire department, vacancies that are open there. And the minister has to close them as fast as he could. So, thank you very much, Drakfri. Also, again, check matters of emphasis, because from matters of emphasis is going to create an audit quiz for you. They're not going to stay free. As soon as there is a yellow line, a yellow light showing red, it's going to be red, and then you'll not be able to cross. So please make sure that it doesn't become yellow. It is always green for you, because I could see there are signs that are saying matters of emphasis. Those matters of emphasis are going to take you to have an audit quiz at the end of the day. But you are doing a great job. Thank you very much, Drug Free. We always feel good to have you, but bad not to come on time to the portfolio committee. Is the portfolio committee first, and WADA second, and say third? It's Parliament first. Name CEO. Please, I plead with you. Okay. Thank you very much, honourable members, and the meeting, Sajid.
ASC members, honourable ASC members, that's the